in the altcoin season, if you are not searching for crypto gems on KuCoin, you're doing it wrong. As the home of altcoins, KuCoin is offering over 600 tradable coins. Whether you are a beginner or professional trader, you can always find a good product fit on KuCoin, ranging from earning products with passive income to derivatives trading with up to 100 times leverage. Sign up today to find the next crypto gem in DeFi, GameFi, NFT, and Metaverse. Join us with 10 million global investors and claim your $500 welcome bonus now. Welcome to KuCoin. It's KuCoin. Sign up to get a 500 USDT welcome bonus.
Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Young. Each week, we'll be interviewing someone from the blockchain industry to learn more about this fast-moving cryptocurrency economy. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The CoinGecko podcast is produced each week to help you stay ahead of the curve. Show notes can be found at podcast.coingecko.com. I highly encourage you to join our newsletter where we send out top news in the crypto industry every Monday to Friday. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter and Telegram at CoinGecko.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ben, and as usual, I'm the host of today's podcast. Today, we have Sam Kazemian, the founder of Frex Finance. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Sam. So before we get started, I generally like to ask our guests on the show, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into crypto, and, you know, yeah, the usual.
Yeah, so I've been in crypto for a while now. Around 2013, I was a student at UCLA and I heard about Bitcoin and mining back then. And I got into researching crypto and getting into mining proof of work coins like Bitcoin. And back then, there's the script coins like Litecoin, Dogecoin was one of the earliest Dogecoin miners. Then afterwards, after college, started my first company named Everpedia. It's a decentralized version of Wikipedia. It's like Wikipedia on the blockchain. And that is going well. And in 2019, I started to think about where I think the stablecoin space and crypto is going as a whole. That was back before DeFi was a real term, or like people really were talking about centralized finance, but I started to get really into stablecoins and the different types of stablecoins. And back then it was just, you know, MakerDAO and the fiat coins, right? People were talking about some, you know, algorithmic designs and things like that. That's where Frax was born, and started Frax in 2019, and we released the first version in late 2020. Frax currently is the number fifth largest stablecoin by market cap. And it's one of the largest DeFi protocols. It makes a lot of revenue per year. I think just about $80 million of revenue annually. Wow. And it's going really well. There's a slew of different protocol infrastructure products like FraxSwap and FraxLend, which we'll talk about soon. And overall, things are going really great, and excited to talk about them.
Yeah, awesome, right? So like you've mentioned, Frex Finance is primarily first a stablecoin protocol. And, you know, the question everyone mind today is, you know, about algorithmic stablecoins, decentralized stablecoins, are they safe? All that kind of things. We actually a couple of weeks back had Justin Sun as well, talking about USDD. And, you know, we're curious to learn about the other models in the space. And, you know, one of the projects he mentioned that he modeled his after as well is a little bit is on Frex Finance. So if you could explain how does Frex Finance work and how does it ensure that its peg remains at $1?
Yeah, definitely. So that's cool that there's others like Justin said that, you know, USDD was inspired by Frax. Frax actually is the first kind of fractional stablecoin, which kind of is modeled after fractional reserve banking, which is like the classical kind of banking that or the traditional financial system works on. The name Fraxis, you know, the combination of the words fractional, algorithmic, stablecoin. And the idea behind it, even back in 2019 when we started, is that we didn't think algorithmic stablecoins, like the original ideas like Basis and like Terra, what would become Terra, I don't think it really was going very big back then. We didn't think any of that stuff would work without exogenous collateral. The whole point of Frax is that it's heavily backed by exogenous collateral and does market operations using smart contracts. It's not backed by only this other governance token. You know, for us, it's the FXS token called Frax Shares. The idea behind Frax is that it's a hybrid of the best of essentially both worlds to get both this security of the peg. Frax has actually never lost its peg, which we're really proud of, and also capital efficiency and usability. And so I don't know if you're familiar with the stablecoin trilemma, which is actually something I like to bring up because it's kind of similar to the blockchain scaling trilemma, but it's the stablecoin trilemma, which means that stablecoins are fighting to achieve all three of these things: peg stability, decentralization in like collateral, and basically capital efficiency. Those are the three pieces of the triangle. But it seems so far that you can only have two of them. You always have to kind of give up one of them. And this the name of this stablecoin trilemma comes from Vitalik's blockchain scaling trilemma, which he likes to explain as, like, you know, blockchains, they almost always want all three things of scalability, throughput, and like decentralization, but you always kind of have to give up one, or there seems to be this kind of natural barrier to being able to perfectly get all three. And the stablecoin trilemma basically says, like, there, if you do two of the things, then one of the last pieces of the triangle is basically not able to be cheap. For example, if you have decentralized collateral and you have a good peg, essentially, that means that you can't scale the money supply. For example, LUSD is purely decentralized collateral. It's over collateralized ETH. It stays relatively stable around a dollar, but LUSD supply can't grow. If more people want LUSD, the only thing you can do is over collateralize ETH with it. And so there just is not enough LUSD when people want a really decentralized, you know, pegged asset. So it gives up the capital efficiency of money creation, right? And then you might have something like, you know, Terra, right, which is technically backed by collateral of its own governance token. And it's super capital efficient because you can mint it out of thin air, but then it gives up the peg stability, right? Sometimes it's a dollar and other times it implodes and everyone loses their money, right? And, you know, you can think of this kind of trilemma as it's hard to get all three. I think, and we think personally, that the Frax has the best performance out of any stablecoin that exists and has existed on this stablecoin trilemma, which means it's kept its perfect peg. It is decentralized as much as possible. Now we'll get into some of the collateral. There is some exposure to USDC, and that is a concern that a lot of people have for Frax, but it is a fully non-custodial stablecoin. There's no blacklist, there's absolutely nothing, there's no way for anyone or any entity or anything to, you know, take possession of Frax stablecoin. It's decentralized in that way. And obviously Frax is very scalable and capital efficient because it's a fractional algorithm, so that when there's a lot of demand for stable currency, it actually can expand in supply in protocol and liquidity pools, in lending markets, and all of these places to actually give people access to a decentralized currency that they want to hold. So in short, I think that a fractional kind of hybrid system captures and solves all three desirability properties of the stablecoin trilemma. And so far, it seems like that's true. And it's, you know, Frax is growing in one of the fastest stablecoins, number five right now on CoinGecko's own rankings. I like to look at the stablecoin ranking, but CoinGecko, that's how that's what I check every day.
Cool. And, you know, we obviously talked a lot about Terra because it was one of the biggest events that happened in crypto ever, I would say, like one of the biggest Black Swan events. And obviously, this has brought a lot of heat on the stablecoin ecosystem and the industry as a whole. You know, how has this affected Frax? You know, you mentioned Frax model for success has been very successful so far. But has this affected, you know, the state, the point of view of, you know, the regulators on the stablecoin market? And, you know, where is the industry heading after this Terra fall?
Yeah, I'm generally optimistic about regulations, but, you know, we'll see. However, I think that basically the decentralized stablecoin space right now is dominated by DAI and then Frax as the two largest ones. There's a lot of other ones that are up and coming and interesting. Like you guys had Justin Sun talk about USDT the other day. There's smaller stablecoins that bring unique things to the table, like LUSD, which is like fully decentralized in every piece of collateral and things like that. There's unique stablecoins like Rai that aren't pegged to the US dollar, and our second stablecoin called the FPI, the Frax price index, that is also not pegged to the US dollar. So I think the stablecoin space will probably end up being one of the most innovative and interesting up and coming spaces in the next 6 to 12 months in crypto. It's probably one of the both most lucrative but also most technologically interesting. In terms of regulation, I mean, I don't know. I think that, you know, as stablecoins become more important, then they'll most likely be, you know, regulated by the US and Europe and Asia. I particularly think that personally, the reason I'm optimistic with regulations, like I think barring any country just outright banning stablecoins or something, or sanctioning them or whatever, I think Frax and like MakerDAO and stuff already comply with any type of possible disclosure laws and like regulatory requirements that could be imposed, right? Because we're entirely deterministic on chain. You can see the exact collateral. Like Frax doesn't have relationships with market makers. It doesn't do anything off of the blockchain. You know, neither does MakerDAO, right? Everything, you can see the collateral and the loans and everything that's outstanding at all times. It's like it's almost like a disclosure every 15 seconds when there's a new block added to the Ethereum blockchain. So the reason I'm particularly, you know, optimistic is unless there's just an outright ban or sanctioning of like stablecoins, which I don't think there will be. We personally, and me as a software developer in the stablecoin space, don't really mind any kind of disclosure requirements. In fact, I think it would be a helpful thing for fiat coins to have disclosure requirements, codified in the law. And I think Frax would be in compliance of those as soon as they're codified and legally. So like I'm pretty optimistic when it comes to regulations.
Very insightful, because I think for many of us, we hear are FUD, right? That it's good to have more balanced perspective from one of the founders of stablecoin, of the decentralized stablecoin, because you know it can get quite tiring when we hear all sorts of news in, because bad news makes good headlines.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's like basically just a lot of people that might not understand, like most of this stuff is basically just noise, right? And so unless there's an actual active effort to like ban stablecoin technology, it's not like it's just going to, go away, right? People actually find stablecoins useful. They're one of the few things in crypto that has indisputable value proposition. You know, some people could argue, well, why are NFTs worth so much? Why is that a picture of, you know, a monkey worth like $200,000 or whatever? That's fine. People can argue about that, but no one can argue about how useful being able to settle stable value like dollars and things are on chain, right? So I'm actually pretty optimistic stablecoins because there's no discussion about the cat's out of the bag, right? It's like everyone knows this is a very useful thing. The question is just how it will end up being a part of the industry, not if.
Right. Definitely agree. Okay. You mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, a couple of projects and how Frax is actually an infrastructure play on the stablecoin industry, right? It's not just a stablecoin. There are also other products that you have. You mentioned a Frax price index, but I'm also aware that you actually have Frax Lend and Frax Swap. You know, could you talk a little bit more about what these products are?
Yeah, definitely. So Frax obviously started out as just a dollar pegged stablecoin, right? The Frax stablecoin, it's pegged to $1. And the mechanisms for it were like these fractional systems of controlling liquidity and AMMs and minting and redeeming Frax. And Frax is so big now that it actually has its own AMM called FraxSwap. And we actually just launched the other week its own internal lending market called Frax Lend. And this is pretty important because the whole vision for Frax is not just to build a bunch of, you know, fun products or something. The vision I like to call is the Trinity. And the point of the Trinity is that I personally think that the entire DeFi stack is composed of, in general terms, a lending market and, you know, debt origination facility, right? Things like Maker CDPs or like Compound Finance or Aave or like FraxLend and liquidity AMMs, right? Things like Curve, Uniswap or like FraxSwap, right? Yep. And then third is stablecoins, right? A liquid, useful and widely circulating unit of account like Frax, right? And these three things I call the Trinity because my personal belief is that they are the same product. They're a financial economic stack. And as one piece of them, whether you start out as a lending market or as a stable coin or as an AMM, gets bigger, in order to capture more market share in DeFi, that project or that DAO will definitely branch over into the other two things to capture the other two pieces that it lacks. No one, no project that I know of, at least today, has all three pieces of the Trinity other than Frax, because we actually just launched FraxLend two weeks ago. But if you think about it, MakerDAO has two, right? They have the ability to do internal lending, right? To over-collateralize and mint DAI. So they basically have kind of a rudimentary lending market. They obviously have the DAI stablecoin, which is the fourth largest stablecoin in the world. So they definitely have two. They don't really have an AMM other than kind of the hand-coded PSM swaps, but I think they will try to more and more think about that market, which basically proves that kind of the Trinity vision that I have is probably correct, right? If you look at stuff like Aave's new Go stablecoin, right? Yeah. A few weeks ago, Aave came out and made a pretty big announcement saying they're working on a stablecoin. And that stablecoin is the native stablecoin to the Aave lending market, right? And so you can see that Aave is trying to capture now stablecoin part of the Trinity, and they obviously have the lending part of the Trinity, right? They haven't really thought about the AMM or the swap side. I think they're a little bit far out from there, right? They still have to at least get like the second piece. But if you think about it, I'm confident that if their stablecoin goes well, they will be thinking about how to capture the swap and on-chain liquidity market. And from the other side of the Trinity, Curve is the second largest DEX, right? And they recently announced CRV USD, which is Curve's native stablecoin, right? And so Curve starts out as an AMM, and in order to capture more market share in the DeFi financial stack, right? They basically are also moving towards issuing their own stablecoin, which is the second part of the Trinity. And I think if their CRV USD stablecoin goes well, they will think about lending and leverage and how to provide debt denominated in CRV USD internally in the, you know, Curve protocol. And, you know, might be still a little early for them to think about that. They have to first release their stablecoin, but that also proves, in my opinion, that everyone, whether they know it or admit it or like to talk about it, they're moving towards this Trinity view that everything in DeFi is this Trinity stack of lending, liquidity, and stablecoins. These are the same thing. They're not different products. And so that's why Frax has Frax Lend and Frax Swap as the, you know, and obviously the Frax stablecoin as the full kind of trifecta of the whole DeFi stack. So as any part of Frax grows, we're able to capture the entire financial stack in one protocol. And I think that's very powerful because that's the end state of DeFi. The end state of DeFi is basically creating a full financial digital economy. And I think we're hopefully, and by the looks of it so far, in the lead there. And I think a lot more projects will be thinking about how to do that.
You know, it's interesting because whenever I try to explain to people who don't really understand crypto, I mention Aave, I say, okay, it's a crypto bank. Just think of it like a bank. I'm borrowing something. Would you say that this Trinity, the Holy Trinity of DeFi, would you say they are becoming more analogous to actual banks where the kind of products and services offered, you know, it's crypto banking, but for DeFi, like for real?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to think about it, right? It's the full financial stack. In fact, I had someone explain it to me that it's basically like the stack that you have as a central bank, right? Because if you think about it, the Fed is able to print money, right? They do a lot of repo purchase agreements for bonds, right? So that's almost like the liquidity they provide. Yeah. That's kind of like protocol controlled liquidity, except it's Fed controlled liquidity, right? And then they obviously have a lot of balance sheet assets of mortgage-backed securities, right? Which are basically loans, right? They're collateralized with a lot of loans that are debt originated against like US property and things like that, right? So it's someone alluded to it being like, you can't be the decentralized Fed if you don't have all the tools and levers of the Fed, right? And so the Trinity is basically every lever and tool that a central bank would have in its, you know, local economy. And I think that's a cool way to say it, right? You need all three of these things to actually be the ability to conduct central banking in any local economy. If you're just a stable coin and you're only able to issue, you know, stable coins and people go do something with them, but you're kind of powerless to do anything else, right? If you're just a lending market, as you know, Aave realized succinctly that you cannot mint your own currency. You have to pay people to be lenders and originate people coming to your lending market to give them, you know, your stable coins. You can't create a stable coin unless you have one, right? So they realized that they need a stable coin, right? And with Curve, they realized that, okay, we have a lot of liquidity. People are able to swap against stable coins and, you know, even volatile assets and stuff, but we can't capture any signage or any kind of rehypothecation of this liquidity, right? And so without that, they're like, we need a stable coin, right? Instead of basically having liquidity against every other projects of stable coins, we just create one of our own. And so I think that this is the right way to think about how to capture the entire financial stack.
You mentioned that, you know, that this is pretty much modeling after a central bank, but obviously this is not a central bank. In fact, there are many central banks in the space. It's hard to call it a central bank when, you know, there's Frax, there's Curve, there's everyone doing or heading towards the same goal. And obviously one of the biggest issues or challenges in the space are, I'm going to say again, it's regulations, right? And, you know, I think the biggest thing over the last 2-3 weeks was the US sanctions on Tornado Cash. And they kind of revived an under-discussed issue of the space, which is actually censorship, right? You know, for the longest time, people have been talking about, oh, you know, this centralized collateral, people can sanction it. USDC, they can sanction because they actually have control over their currency. They can blacklist whoever uses it. And in fact, this is what have happened, right? USDC, in fact, blacklisted Tornado Cash associated collateral, associated USDC. So seeing as FRAX relies on USDC as its primary form of collateral, you know, how has this impacted your vision for the protocol or even your model?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think the Tornado Cash stuff caught a lot of people by surprise. And of whether it gets, you know, overruled in the US judicial system or not, it was actually really important for everyone in the industry to have that conversation. So there's two types of things that I want to highlight before talking about the kind of USDC exposure. And one of them is that the most important thing, in my opinion, is being able to both survive being, you know, sanctioned, but also not being sanctioned itself. Like this, people kind of forget this because, like, sure, Tornado Cash is probably one of the most decentralized projects on Ethereum, right? And its contracts still exist, but almost no one can reasonably use it anymore. Right, because they don't want to actually run afoul of like U.S. sanctions. It's not useful for me. It's not useful for most people I know. Right, and the, you know, anonymity set and the utility you get for using it is tiny now. Right, and it still exists. Sure, it survives or sort of technically. Right, but the point is that you should avoid being sanctioned, but also you should be resilient and survive if you are sanctioned, so that the fact that you can survive actually makes it so that you do not get sanctioned. If you get sanctioned, it's just, I usually like to stress it, it's just as stupid, right? Like it's just as useless. Like even, for example, let's take LUSD, right? Like the one that's only backed as stablecoin, only backed by ETH, right? If LUSD was sanctioned, it survives probably, right? Like the smart contracts still work. I can't use it. Most people can't use it. I don't think, you know, like you won't be able to lend it on Compound. You won't be able to, you know, use it as collateral for most places and stuff. It's basically, socially useless, right?
Yep.
And so the thing is, what you want to do is you want to be able to survive sanctions, but use the ability to survive the sanctions to actually not get sanctioned or basically not become a, you know,
a target.
Basically, exactly, right? And be useful enough to most common, normal, law-abiding people that if it's actually sanctioned, that there will be so much uproar and there'll be so much defense of your useful protocol that hopefully it'll get desanctioned or won't get sanctioned in the first place, right? The issue with Tornado Cash is it was extremely useful for a lot of people, right? But the issue is now that it's so divisive is that it's also useful for all of the hacks and laundering from, you know, black hat hacking and stuff. Now, the thing with Tornado Cash was it was so messed up that you can't just sanction open source code, right? That's essentially like sanctioning free speech. So overall, I was really shocked about it. Now, to the question about like USDC, yeah, I think this is a common concern that's rightfully so. So both MakerDAO's DAI stablecoin and FRAX hold a significant portion of collateral on chain in USDC or some fiat coins. Sometimes it's actually a lot, admittedly. Like if you look at MakerDAO right now, over 82% of all DAI is collateralized by USDC. So it's actually 82% of every DAI in existence is collateralized by one USDC, which is, seems actually kind of crazy, right? And yeah. Frax also does have a USDC exposure. I don't think it has it nearly as much, but one of the things that Frax does is that it deploys USDC and other collateral to different DEXs, right? Like on Curve, on Uniswap, and on FraxSwap as well. And in order for Frax to actually get blacklisted and have its, you know, USDC be inaccessible, Circle has to actually blacklist Curve. It has to blacklist Uniswap. It has to blacklist those individual pair contracts that other people are LPing in, that other people are swapping in, other people are staking in those. And while that's technically possible, it is a different trust model than, for example, MakerDAO holding it in just a smart contract that they control, which you know, Circle can surgically strike, right? And yep. Blacklist those kinds of things. For example, if for Frax to lose all of its USDC, Circle would have to blacklist the Frax BP Curve pool, all of the Frax USDC Uniswap pools. And if it does that, admittedly, it would be very bad. So they're not in any way discounting that. However, what they would do also is they would brick those pools and essentially make it so that all of the Frax in those pools are actually inaccessible and inswappable, which even though that's bad, it actually makes it so that there's less Frax in the open market that users can pull out to redeem from the protocol. So it's actually an interesting thing, because changing the place where the protocol holds USDC makes it so that it becomes far more costly for Circle to actually, or any, you know, fiat coin issuer to actually blacklist Frax. And if MakerDAO does this, obviously, if they deploy their USDC to Curve and Uniswap, which I think they might a little bit to Uniswap, but they mostly hold it themselves. But if they predominantly move it around, then it becomes very difficult to actually blacklist MakerDAO as well. Now, with that said, ideally, there wouldn't be very much, if any, USDC or fiat coin collateral exposure. And so we go back to the whole stablecoin trilemma, which is in order for a stablecoin to have very good peg, right, never breaking its peg, and also being able to have elastic money supply, right, to increase the money supply to meet demand, it seems like the last thing it has to give up is a complete decentralized collateral, some exposure to real dollars, if that's what its peg is. And so it's not a coincidence that Frax and DAI are the two largest on-chain stablecoins by far. In fact, if you add up all other dollar peg stablecoins and you combine them, all other on-chain, you know, decentralized dollar peg stablecoins, mm-hmm. they would be smaller than Frax or DAI cumulative. Mm-hmm. Like if you add them all up, that's how large the size of DAI and Frax are. We're the only ones over a billion. And DAI is like 6-7 billion, right? And all of the other stable coins that are on chain that, you know, out that they're entirely decentralized and collateral, all this stuff, they just demonstrate that they've done the other side of the stable coin trilemma, right? They've sacrificed scalability for decentralized collateral and the peg, right? They hold a peg and they have decentralized collateral. They have very little market cap because they're not able to expand the money supply easily. Now, there might be a, you know, completely new, never before seen innovation that kind of breaks the stablecoin trilemma, right? For example, Vitalik claims that sharding in proof of stake and essentially L2 rollups breaks the blockchain trilemma, right? You're able to have high throughput, decentralization, and the ability to basically have security, right? And mm-hmm. shared state. So that's kind of the answer to the blockchain trilemma. Maybe there is an answer to the stablecoin trilemma. I think the answer will have to be something that's similar to Frax Lend, or lending on chain that's extremely malleable, right? The ability to originate debt in many different ways that isn't just over-collateralized ETH or over-collateralized Bitcoin loans. And so FraxLend, for example, is our lending system that's isolated pairwise lending. It's different than what Aave currently is or Compound. And hopefully, as FraxLend grows, we're able to lower USDC reliance and fiat coin reliance. But we haven't seen, you know, to be frank, we haven't seen any stablecoin project outright be able to break this stablecoin trilemma. Perhaps someone will. Perhaps they're, perhaps Frax will. Perhaps MakerDAO will. We're in the best position to do it, right? With all three aspects of the Trinity. But it goes to be seen. I'm confident that in the next year we'll have the least amount of fiat coin reliance with one of the largest amount of circulating supply. But we shall see.
Last question for the day. You talk a lot about the stablecoin trilemma, but now, underpinning it is also adoption, which I think is one of the biggest challenges for any stablecoin. Because assuming you can create a perfect stablecoin that embodies and addresses the trilemma, there is still the point of adoption, right? You can't naturally expect everyone to just suddenly gravitate towards you. There's always market perception, market psychology. It's like one of the big reasons why Terra, despite its flaws, was so successful and they had over 20 billion worth of market cap because of the perception of its usefulness and reliability of its model. So my question to you is, why use Frax over other stablecoins in the space, or why pick this stablecoin over any other stablecoin in the space when in crypto, it's not like a normal country where, okay, I go to this country, I have to use this currency. In crypto, more often than not, this place accepts more than one type of currency.
Yeah, well, was Terra used for the reliability of its model? I would argue that it was used because they paid everyone 20% yield, right? And that didn't
exactly
go over well. So I think that just highlights that there's no easy way to grow adoption. You either have to pay people, which is unsustainable, or you have to genuinely have something that's unique, useful, and safe, right? And so the thing we're trying to do with Frax is that, like I said, if we can, solve the stablecoin trilemma, that is actually something that's useful, right? That's actually something that is non-custodial, it's stable, and there's no risk of blacklisting, and it's fully entirely yours if you own it, right? And so if we could do that, there's clear value proposition over USDC and Tether and things like that, right? And I think that's one of the main things to do. However, if basically what you want is, and I think what users want is something that's actually safe in terms of the peg, like we've never broken our peg, something like USDC, which is safe in terms of the peg, but also something that is used and able to get you yield in places on chain, right? Not something crazy, not something like, 20% that it's
not
paid
sustainable
out. Yeah, token inflation or printing more stable coins, but something that's actually useful and actually can act as an on-chain savings account or like yield system. That's also one thing that we're trying to make sure Frax is used in as many DAOs, on-chain protocols, and used in as many liquidity pools and things like that. And you'll actually see, I think, Frax is one of the best yielding stable coins, not in like a crazy degen way or some kind of like, guaranteed 20% system, but it's one of the best places to stake on Curve, on Convex, on our own gauge system that you can check out on your app, frax.finance/staking. You can see how a lot of people use Frax and are, associated LP pools and gauge rewards and stuff for passive, but also very reliable yield. And that eventually will have a lot of Lindy effect, right? And that's, I think, something that will pay dividends in the next year or two.
Right. I think that's all I have to talk about today, Sam. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a great talk.
Yeah, it's great being on. Thanks for having me.
All right, that wraps up the show. Thank you for listening to the CoinGecko podcast with Bobby. If you like our show and want to know more, check out podcast.coingecko.com or please leave us a review on iTunes. If you have any feedback, do drop us an email at hello@coingecko.com. Join us for more next week. See ya!
This podcast is provided as part of the overall information on cryptocurrency contained on our website, is for your general information only, and does not howsoever constitute any endorsement, financial or investment advice, nor any solicitation or offer of securities or other financial instruments. CoinGecko and the podcast presenter makes no warranties, implied or express, of any kind in relation to this podcast, including, without limitation, the accuracy and updatedness of its content. All opinions and recommendations therein in the podcast are based on the personal opinion of the presenter. Please conduct your own research and procure professional advice should you, at your own risk, decide to howsoever invest or trade in relation to the content contained in the podcast.